Recording.
Well, welcome everybody. I think we'll start now. Robin's got another appointment to go to this evening, so we need to get moving so we can have a good opportunity to hear his talk and perhaps ask him some questions at the end of the evening. So welcome to the second Thursday talk. It's part of an evening series that the St Kilda Historical Society have commenced as of 2010. There will be further Thursday evening talks as we go through the year. And I'll mention those at the end of the proceedings. Tonight we have a very, very special guest. We have Robin Grow, who's President of the Art Deco and Modernist Society. The Society had its beginnings about 12 years ago.
Longer, 15, sorry.
I was just looking at my copies of Art Deco and the magazine, and it went back, seemed to go back for about 12 years. And the organisation has really grown spectacularly in the 15 years that it's been in existence. It now has, I think at the last AGM, it was over 900 members.
800.
800, okay. And it's developed an international reputation, really, as a bit of a voice for the interwar movement in Australia, internationally. Robin's a passionate about preserving interwar buildings, and he has a special interest in researching and documenting the architecture and the designs of the era. He is a regular presenter and tour leader, contributor to the Journal of the Society, called The Spirit of Progress, and the author of a recently released book entitled Art Deco Melbourne. If you've seen the book, if you haven't seen the book, it's in the library, it's just wonderful. We should have a copy here too. Oh, we have. Very good. There's a waiting list for us, because it's so popular. Robin is a very popular speaker. Last time he was here, we were in the meeting room, we had over 100 people, and it was standing room only. And it was so popular, we had to invite him back again. So without much further ado, I would like to bring Robin to the microphone and commence the talk. Thank you.
And thanks for the opportunity of coming back and talking to this group again. Seeing I'm not going to get invited under the collectors now.
What was your special interest?
Technology. Yeah, thanks, Peter. What I want to do tonight is just go through some of the things that happened in the introduction of what loosely called the Art Deco style, and that covers a whole range of different terms, into Melbourne, with some emphasis on St Kilda. As far as my St Kilda cred goes, my first 5 years were spent in Irwell Street. Okay, so I'm in there. Luckily we got out before my parents could convince me to barrack for St Kilda. So they're good years. So let's start off with just have a look at what happened with this thing called Art Deco as it came into Melbourne. And if anybody's got any questions or comments to make, please yell them out. Or if I make any mistakes, I'm always just a bit hesitant of speaking in front of experts like Peter. Okay, what we've got is a decade of change in the 1930s. 1934, the city celebrated its centenary, and there were a number of forces that caused major changes in Melbourne. And one of the things that I always come back to is money. Nothing in the world of design and architecture, etc., happens without somebody putting up the cash. Okay, so these wonderful buildings didn't just appear; somebody cashed them. And the reason a lot of them were there were to make more money from tenants, shoppers, etc., etc. So I always keep coming back to cash. The other thing that was happening at the time was major changes in style, and a lot of this had come from Europe, particularly Holland and Germany, as far as the architecture goes. And this is a reaction against previous generations and perhaps the excessive ornamentation of previous generations. And the other thing that happened, and we see this particularly in the shopping areas, was the introduction of colour. So in 1930s Melbourne, the city was transformed, but one of the ways it was transformed was away from drab brick buildings and stone buildings into shiny, bright, glossy terracotta buildings. And so this had a major effect on the appearance of the city. And there were also new materials that came into architecture, like terracotta, glass bricks and white metals. And there were new building techniques. And those techniques enabled buildings to be made quicker, cheaper, and cheaper to maintain. And of course, coming back to money, that was very, very dear to the people who were constructing the buildings. And so this is building on here. And maybe I should be over on the side.
I really don't need this. I don't think. John, do you need this for the tape? No.
Okay. Okay. All right. So that's a bit of the background. Now, the origins of the Art Deco movement are commonly regarded as starting in Paris in 1925, which they didn't, of course. This was a movement, or all these design changes were a movement in Europe from way before 1925. But it's a convenient point to hang the start of Art Deco on. And this was a huge exposition in Paris, and it provided a focus for changes to all areas of design. And the buildings there had to be the latest and the most modern. There was no historical replicas required. But most importantly, it was an exposition designed as a temple of consumerism. Get people to buy goods, and of course, the French being the French, they wanted them all to buy French goods and not anybody else's. But it's an interesting point to look at. And this is the era when new styles were coming around, mainly from Europe, as I said. And so we see the influence of the Bauhaus movement coming from Germany, and we also see a new department store in Germany. So this is a totally different style of architecture. Lots of glass, lots of metal, lots of geometric designs, juxtaposed against semicircular designs. So we have all these interesting shapes in buildings that are coming around. The Bauhaus, of course, didn't survive Hitler, and I think that department store survived the war, but it didn't survive the peace. It was torn down in 1960, I think, probably for a car park. they do it over there, sir. Now, some of the other buildings, the knockout buildings that came along at the time, was this town hall in Hilversum by a guy called Dudok. And I only show this because of the similarities that you'll see between McGrub Girls High School, Heidelberg Town Hall. So we have our versions of buildings like this, groundbreaking building that arrived in Melbourne a few years later, because we typically ran 5 to 10 years behind the rest of the world at that time. And there's a number of good reasons for that. Okay, now when we think of the Art Deco style, probably the first building that everybody thinks of is the Chrysler Building. And this is, of course, a fabulous building right in the middle of New York. And it was constructed for the car maker, Walter Chrysler. And on the ground floor of the Chrysler Building was a car showroom. And finished in this shiny aluminium, and with lots of car motifs on there. There's hubcaps and all sorts of things there, as well as a few gargoyles there. And the story of New York with the competition between the Empire State and the Chrysler Building is pretty well known. But this symbolises, because one of the things that's in here is the sunburst. You can see the sunburst motif repeated there, and the flagpole. Every good deco building has to have a flagpole. Some have got more than one, of course. This is just an interesting photo of the guy out cleaning the eagle's head.
And how'd you like to have a job like that? Without any safety harness, I think.
I hope there's no occult and safety people here tonight. And now, getting to an area that's in some way similar to St Kilda. In my opinion, South Beach in Miami is the Art Deco capital of the world. The people in Napier in New Zealand are fond of saying that Napier is, but it's nothing compared to South Beach. There's about 800 buildings in a couple of square miles, all in the style. But thinking about it in terms of St Kilda, a beachside area with lots of smallish hotels and apartment blocks, pretty close in. Now this area was developed, it's across the causeway from Miami proper. It's developed because the other hotels up in Miami Beach proper wouldn't allow Jewish people in. So a lot of the Jewish people and a lot of the architects went down to South Beach and developed this whole area there. The other reason, I mean, it's a wonderful area, but it also gives us a view of how activism can save the area. Because this area was slated for demolition in the 70s, I think, the local council. We always blame the local council, don't we? They're always good targets. They wanted to demolish the whole lot and concrete it and build concrete office blocks. Luckily, there was a feisty lady called Barbara Kapitman, and thank goodness for feisty old ladies, because they sometimes get some wonderful results. And she saved this area, got it added to the Heritage Register of the USA, and now it's a hugely successful commercial zone. And you may remember back to Miami Vice, which really put it on the map. So I just put that in because it reminds me of St Kilda. Now, changes to Melbourne occurred in the 20s and 30s, and probably the first modernist building was the Capitol Centre and the Capitol Cinema. Anybody been in the Capitol Cinema? I know Peter has. It's wonderful, isn't it? And it'll be open during open house, I think, in late July. Was open last year. So if you haven't seen it, or if you want to go in and have a look at it again, go along to open house. Sadly, the lights don't work anymore because the light box that controls them blew up, and the RMIT who owns it won't spend the money for another one. But we see some of the geometric designs that were coming through, and the Griffins were particularly fond of this style. And we see it as a modernist building, not as an Art Deco building, of course.
Robin, can I just interrupt you for a moment?
Yep.
On something mundane. There's two cars parked out in the entrance to the underground car park, and the staff can't go home. So if anybody's parked there, do you think they could move their car, please? Oh, it's nobody.
Okay.
Yeah, I'll go and show what she has to do. Someone else.
And the registration is NRJ 989. We're far too law-abiding a group, aren't we? Okay. Now, just near the Capitol building in 1939, we have one of the best examples of the introduction of the style into Melbourne. This is the Century Building, designed by Marcus Barlow.
Beautiful use of terracotta and extreme vertical line. Unfortunately, somebody knocked this flagpole off a number of years ago, and we don't know where it is. Hopefully it's in a shed somewhere.
The Century, Swanson and Little Bird. Yes.
Now, we've just nominated it to the Victorian Heritage Register, and what is today? 7/8. Within 5 days, we're hoping it'll be added to the Victorian Heritage Register, which will give it total safety, won't it? I mean, the planning department and the minister would never override anything that was on the Heritage Register, but it is the best level of protection that we have. Don't start beyond the City of Melbourne. Now, places of business. All of these buildings, every sort of building and type of building and use of a building has examples in this style. Not everything in those years was in what we would call deco style, but a lot were. And so we see
very, very basic buildings like the Commonwealth Bank, the headquarters in Bourke Street. And Commonwealth Bank was a huge concern in the 30s and had grown greatly. And they needed a headquarters in the city. Interestingly, they put it in Bourke Street rather than Collins Street, where the banks traditionally are. And this is because it was near the department store precinct. So we'll talk about department stores in a minute. Yep, I know. I'm getting to that. You want to swap? Good spotting, though. Good spotting. This was headquarters, and designed by the government architect. Government architects were some quite gifted government architects. And as I said, it was near the department store precinct, because in those days, of course, when they closed up at night, the money had to go to the bank. There's no electronic transfer overnight. Somebody had to take a bag of money up end of the day or first thing the next morning. So it needed to be near that department store precinct. Now, as you pointed out, there were Commonwealth Bank branches all around Melbourne, generally built to a formula, but a very, very stylish formula. And not all of them have survived. Sorry, most of them have survived, but I think there might only be one that actually still operates as a bank. A lot of them have been turned into restaurants, like this one, the branch that was Jackie O's for quite a long time in Barclay Street. You probably all know it. And one of the things about buildings from this era is they're still very stylish and elegant, and they lend themselves to a recycling into a new purpose. And certainly that building fits in neatly there. The only problem was with a lot of the Commonwealth banks is they designed these beautifully stylish modern buildings, and then they came along and put a big Gothic font on the front of it. So somebody got something seriously wrong there. Now, places of the buildings, another building type that was common in the 30s was dairies, because with the Depression coming along, a lot of blokes thought, oh, I'll just become a milkman and a milk vendor. That'll be pretty easy. I'll have to get up early, but that's okay. And the government soon realised that this was going to lead to a serious deterioration in the quality of milk, which is very, very, very dear to everyone's heart. So they passed legislation saying that there were certain requirements that vendors had to meet. As a result of that, a lot of them were upgraded with their equipment, but at the same time, the exteriors were also remodelled and upgraded. And so this is two examples from Kilda here. This is up on the corner of High Street and Argyle Street. And that was the Ideal Dairy, designed by Godfrey and Spell as a quite a prominent firm. What this used to have, it's now, of course, been used for business, it had a great big neon sign. And neon was a new material of the era and became very, very prominent. You think of the picture theatres with their neon sign. And that just had one word on it, milk. So you were in no doubt as you came over the hill where you could buy your milk that night. Now, the other one I've got on here is Quilkey's up in Calroy Street, which is quite a popular little place. One of the things about dairy is they invariably had a fair bit of land around them. So Quilkey, for example, has got an open area out the back that's very, very popular with local families. And the other thing that I like about Quilkey's is just this combination of brick and render in the lines here, which we see quite a lot, and also the typography there. And lettering and lettering styles were completely redeveloped in this era as well. So buildings themselves did away with ornamentation, so did the lettering. It just became very, very stylized and remodeled and slanted and all sorts of things. And included in the building fabric in this case, often it was just bolted on outside with metal, because it was a lot cheaper to do it that way than actually included in the fabric of the building. Everything comes back to money. Now, places to relax. You might recognise this one. Going to the pictures, of course, is a favourite of people in Melbourne in those days, still is. The early cinemas were largely based on, or largely picture palaces, because that was the model that they had. They took it from opera houses in Europe. But it didn't take too long for the suburban theatres to be, for the theatres to move from the city to the suburbs. And of course, when they were built in the suburbs, they were built in a much cheaper design. Very, very simple, very elaborate. Very, very simple, very elegant.
And the use of long-wearing, durable materials like terrazzo in the floor.
And terrazzo is a wonderful material. Very durable, very stylish. It can be have all sorts of colours included in it. And
this has been there for 80 years. It looks like it was laid yesterday. A lot of epic theatres have it. But the joy of this place is this first floor balcony up here. And we see little wave motifs. Now you can interpret that as a wave motif being sympathetic with its location somewhere near the sea.
Maybe not. There are all sorts of those motifs, but they were all invariably simple and elegant. And it's good to see the Astor saved a couple of years ago now. There was also neon signage and comfortable seats and feet warmers and ticket boxes that resembled spaceships. All sorts of things like that were in theatres. As well as trying rooms. Does anybody know about trying rooms? Okay. Does anybody not know about trying rooms? You'd come along with your baby in a pram and they'd put it into a special room and give you a ticket. And if your baby started crying, they'd flash your baby's number up on the screen. Well, that was the theory anyway. I suppose if there was a particularly special part of the show, Mum would just ignore it. And of course, the Hollywood presentations were also responsible for spreading the love of this style around the world. When you think about some of the sets that particularly MGM had in their shows, a gentleman called Cedric Gibbons was in charge of design, and so that spread modernism around the world. And you think about some of the Astaire and Rogers films and the ladies with the white telephones. And some of the fabulous houses in some of those films. This is a major vehicle for the spread of this style. Now, one of the things Melbourne is mad on, of course, is going to the footy and the cricket. And there's a football grandstand at Glenfair Oval, which is a particular favourite of mine, designed by a guy called Stuart Calder, who also did the McPherson's building in the city. But have a look at it, not as a ship, not as a grandstand, but as a ship. And so it's sailing through the night with the end of the ship's funnel there and a couple of portholes. And this was quite a common design because people were very much in love with the nautical ideals and the idea of sailing on cruise ships, which very few people down here could afford, but they could see newsreels, etc., with all the stars crossing from London to New York. Okay. Oops. Now, places to relax. One of the favourite places in Melbourne, of course, was the Prince of Wales down on Ackland Street, and corner of Ackland and Fitzroy, designed in 1937 by a gentleman called Robert McIntyre, who worked for the Carlton and United breweries and redeveloped and remodelled a lot of the pubs around. Like Gary's, pubs went through this transformation in the 30s with a lot of new equipment, all dedicated to one thing, keeping the beer cool or cold. That's all they particularly cared about. But this is a very interesting design because it's got these balconies here, and they've used black tiling, shiny black tiling in the separation between the two rooms there. Because this pub became very, very almost notorious in the Second World War, because this is where a lot of the US officers hang out. And so there were lots of locals hung out there as well, and many girls went home with a new pair of silk stockings from there. But it was a major concern for the Wowsers at the time, because you had all these soldiers with a gut full of beer and all of these local girls, and the pub shut at 6 o'clock. So they described the park over the road as sizzling with sex after six. We're talking about houses in this era, and a lot of them, again, picking up on the nautical style. This is Burnham Beaches up at Sherbrooke, and of course one of the major car designs from the period, Accord, which some of you may remember from the National Gallery Victoria exhibition a couple of years ago, and well, we just got it into the gallery by about that much. That was a major effort. But houses at the top end of the market utilised a lot of new building techniques and materials, a lot of them based on European modernism. This is 33, so it's more a sort of a nautical design than a stark European design. Now, places to live, of course, the major change in this era to places to live occurred with flats. And if there's one area that's sort of the epicentre of development of flats, it's St Kilda. And not everybody wanted to live in a house. A lot of people wanted to live where the action was, near the transport, near the beach, near the dance hall, near the cinemas. And so the flats of St Kilda became very, very, very popular. They're often on blocks that were hived off from large houses. So Mandalay was on the side of a Gothic mansion called Rathlin, I think. Gothic Revival mansion called Rathlin, which was later destroyed by fire. And flat living, of course, was controversial because, again, the Wowsers didn't think it was a good idea for people to be living in flats, and who knows what young people might get up to if they were left alone. And they did. This is one of the attractions in the first place. But tenants enjoyed living in places like this, and a lot of them also had flat roofs, so you could have a laundry up there, but you could also have parties up there. And there's a couple along Fitzroy Street that I think Banford's got a flat roof, and there's a few others around. And Delmarie's another good example of this is in St Leonard's Place, and again, I mean, if there's one building that talks about St Kilda Art Deco, it would have to be this one with the palm tree there. And again, very, very modern, wrapping around with just those simple lines. So there was no decoration on a lot of these buildings, just a line in the cement render was enough, or a group of lines, a rule of three, or group of three, was quite common. And the ship railing on the top. Now, I will say that I've skillfully managed to leave out the packing case on the top of this building that somebody thought was a good idea for storage a few years ago. But it is a beautiful building, designed by a gentleman called Stuart Hall, who unfortunately died of malnutrition and alcoholic poisoning. One of the unfortunate blokes who came back from the Second World War, but never really got going again after the war. At the other end of St Kilda, we have a villa up in Catteroy Street, and this is an excellent example of a large block where they overplaced the building on the corner. And what we see here is this central section there, the stairwell, with these deco motifs on them, and here's one of them. The building's just been refurbished, and they had an awful time getting the concrete restored there, because a lot of these buildings the major building material was steel reinforced concrete, but at the time they didn't have a very good understanding of how long that stuff would last, and so there's a fair bit of deterioration in some of these buildings. But this is a wonderful location opposite Quilkie's Dairy and the park there. And of course, paying homage to the motor car, this one was popular because cars could come into the door, and it also had garages down the back. There were seven flats, six in the block, and one for the caretaker over the garages. So we weren't talking about ordinary low-level or low-income people renting in here. So these would have been reasonably well off. And I think there was one stage in its life where it was all of the flats were rented to single Jewish women, single old Jewish women. So the Brody corporate meetings would have been fun, wouldn't they? Now, another prominent block in Elwood is Windermere, and I just showed you this one because one of the characteristics of this style is these extended cantilevered balconies and steel reinforced concrete enabled it. And so Windermere has this large balcony at the front, and it's also got some extra some terrific detailing down the side. Now, this is designed by a gentleman called J. Esmond Dorney, who was a local. And that meant that his mum was a local, which was good for him because she commissioned him to design a whole range of blocks of flats. So I don't think he would have got much work otherwise. But anyway, he did some very, very interesting buildings. He went to live in Tassie after the war and did some excellent stuff in Tasmania, award-winning stuff in Tasmania. He came back from the war and found out that his wife was living with another bloke. He said he didn't mind that so much, it was just the fact that the other bloke was using his golf clubs and driving his sports car. So he thought he'd go to Tasmania to live. Now, Woi Woi is another one. And Woi Woi is an interesting one, designed 1935 by Geoffrey Newton of Newton and Grounds, and he was a modernist who picked up a whole lot of ideas in Europe. And a lot of the modernist stuff from Europe was quite groundbreaking. It's really like the stepping down the side of the entranceway there, and the lettering, of course. And it was described as austere, daringly minimal, rendered plain, without ornament. It's probably the earliest multi-storied modernist building in Australia. Now, one of the things. Woi Woi, Marine Parade, down along the strip there, just down from Edgewater Towers. Yeah, on the left. Yeah. Okay. Spike Kelly, sorry? Did Spike... He may have. That's right. In fact, though, I did see something recently about an early ABC radio production, and Spike Milligan was in it. So yeah. I don't know if that was coming from... Yeah, but yeah. And remember, Spike, for those who don't know, Spike's mum lived in Woi Woi. And when there was an asteroid about to crash onto the Earth some time ago, it might have been a Russian asteroid, a Russian spaceship, and Spike said, if it lands on Woi Woi, it means war.
You know
he's got to describe
that his
chance, don't you? I told you I was sick. Yeah. But the thing I love about Woi Woi is because there was a marketing ploy at that time of giving exotic names to blocks of flats around Melbourne to make them more attractive to the tenants, because after all you had to get the money in. They were called places like Manhattan and the Ritz Mansions and Biarritz, all of these places. And then we come to Woi Woi, which I think is where the owner was born. An interesting difference. Places to study and worship were built in this style too. Anybody go to McGrob Girls? Any of you blokes hang around McGrob Girls? There's always one. And as well as schools, there were churches, and this is a one I'm particularly fond of in Camberwell, and it's like an industrial building. Inside it's got a sawtooth roof. To look at it, you wouldn't know it was a church, would you? It could be anything. It could be a modern office block. It could be anything.
Commonwealth Bank.
It's quite similar, yeah. Now, in St Kilda, weren't too many other churches, but what we had here was a number of synagogues, and there were two designed by a gentleman called Joseph Clotel, one of my favourite architects. And what we see here is the original synagogue in the Melbourne Synod, no, St Kilda Synagogue, sorry, in Townwood Crescent, 1926. And we see it's got this huge dome in there, and if any of you haven't been in there and ever get the opportunity, go in and have a look at it. It's just superb inside. But don't not too hard on the walls, because the model for this was from a temple in Chicago, and the Chicago group were pretty well cashed up. They could afford marble columns. When Joe came along and designed this, he could only afford plaster columns that looked like marble. So an exquisite building. 10 years later, oh, sorry, there is another story about this one. It's because there was a subdivision. There was an old house that was subdivided, and the members of the congregation were going along to bid for it. The only trouble was, it was on a Saturday. And so there was this huge fight in the congregation about who should be out at an auction on Saturday. Well, they had no choice. The real estate industry in those days had auctions on Saturday and Saturday only. So no matter what religion you were, if you wanted to bid on something, you had to turn up on the Saturday. Anyway, it went on for a number of years, that one. 10 years later, he designed the Beth Israel, Temple Beth Israel, in Elmer Road. Now, all that's left of that is just one side wall. But have a look at that. It's quite similar to... that could be a Commonwealth Bank too, couldn't it? Cream brick building. Now I'm going to have to whiz through, Peter. I'm sorry about this. Just see what else we can find in St Kilda. We've got shopping in the city, and we've got shopping in the suburbs. And so we talked before about the use of colour. These buildings in Ackland Street obviously weren't this colour when they were built. They probably would have been white or cream. But even in 2005, they were still recognising that if you want people to come into your shop, colour is a primary source of attracting people into shops. And just a very, very simple design with these horizontal rakes along here, and then the vertical, almost a mini column there.
Places to shop. There's a Maple store right near your door, which there certainly was. Freemasons Hospital in East Melbourne is a great design, as is the centre in Ivanhoe, the Heidelberg Town Hall. So remember back to that Dutch building, it's quite similar to that. Just mention town halls. A lot of suburbs had new town halls, and the Ivanhoe Centre is probably the prime example of that. Some of them remodelled their town halls. So Richmond, for example, remodelled the town hall in Bridge Road into a quite a stunning design, and the architect, of course, was Peter Johnson's grandfather, Harry. So, had to get that in for you, Peter. Repatriation Clinic in St Kilda Road. Have a look at the exquisite metalwork on those gates, and that building is still there. I don't know how much longer.
It was part of rebuilding the Army Depot. There was a whole program, and I know the name of the architect, but I can't remember the building. There were several at the same time.
Yeah. Probably
Hallandale.
Yeah. Melbourne on the Move. We won't talk about the Spirit. I'd love to talk about the Spirit, but we'd need half an hour. And one of the things that happened in this era, we talked about lack of ornamentation, but there was still ornamentation, and it often came about in the way of incorporating animal motifs. And so we see the Army Band building down in Albert Park, which is a delight, little koala clinging to the edge in the A&A building in the city, and the stylized kangaroo with a flat flange. And one of the things they did in these days was modify the human body and the body of animals to make them flat and streamlined. And of course, my favourite is a shark. It's the only shark I've ever seen on a house up in Olinda. And sorry. A&A building in bottom of Elizabeth Street. So it's got the kangaroo and the emu and the Australian coat of arms. Of course, they were the two animals that wouldn't take a backward step. So. Friezes on buildings were again showing a stylized body. And I like this one. This is off a bank in the city, because what it does is tie together a number of the forces that were around at the time. So we've got agriculture represented by the wheat. We've got industry, the cogs, and we've got the sheep, and all being held together by the bank handing out the money. But we looked at this building a million times, and then one day we were looking at a close-up photo, and we thought, hang on, what's he got in his hand?
in one hand he's got a railway engine, and the other hand he's got a ship. So we've got transport in there as well. So in one panel on a city bank, we've got almost the entire ethos of the 30s encapsulated there.
Capstone, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. Bill Bowles was the sculptor. Well, Klaus, we won't talk about that. Now, just to finish up about demolition of buildings, this was Melbourne's greatest loss of a modernist building. This is the Mission to Seaman in Port Melbourne. And the planning minister at the time, McClellan and Mirvac, couldn't wait to get this building knocked over. They were almost in a paroxysm of joy, I think, at the time. But what a wonderful building it was, and what a wonderful community centre it would make today. Designed in the shape of a cross, which was befitting of its purpose, because there was a lot of religious activity went on there amongst the visiting sailors. And adaptive reuse of buildings is something that we're particularly fond of, and this is the Sun Theatre over in Yarraville, which is a Christopher Cowper building from 1938. And here we see the neon again in the sun up on the ceiling there. It's just a wonderful design. And in the entrance foyer there, there's Terrazzo with ST in the middle of it. Now, Melbourne's greatest loss has been Lonsdale House, which we just lost a little while ago. And I'd like to thank the Minister of Planning and the City of Melbourne for their gutless efforts on that one. This building could have been saved, and should have been saved, and we did our best to save it. But when you're up against forces like all the commercial retail forces, Heritage Victoria, the City of Melbourne, the Minister for Planning, Colonial for State, and Myers, I felt very lonely on the other side of the table, I can assure you. And it will be replaced by an Apple store. And as we sat opposite the Colonial's First State lawyers, they said, well, of course, it won't just be a store. It's making a hero statement. Yeah? And this guy actually said it with a straight face. Anyway, when you find out, if somebody finds out what a hero statement is, please let me know, will you? Because I'm still figuring it out. However, it doesn't matter. The building's gone. And one of the things that happens with government policy in these heritage areas is the policy might change and somebody else comes along that subscribes to heritage, but the building's gone. You can't turn around policy like you can in some other areas and recover to where you were once the building's in rubble, which this one is. Anyway, I'll stop there. And I'm sorry that it's been a bit rushed, but thank you very much for your attention. Anybody got any quick questions? Earl's Court. No. There's plenty of St. Moritz, but not Earl's Court. So you.
So did people come back from the war and start designing Art Deco again? In Lisbon, for instance, there are Art Deco buildings which go into the 50s, but
presumably
the blinds were just pulled down,
weren't they? You're probably right. There wasn't much building after the Second World War. Probably the First World War had the most effect, because a lot of the architects who were fighting over there stayed over there and worked for British and American and European firms and brought back a lot of those ideas. But they didn't get back here until probably 1930. Although the guys who designed the Shrine of Remembrance, both ex-servicemen who came back, designed that, and then one of them, James Wardrop, went on to design some wonderful deco buildings, like the McDonald's in Clifton Hill. So, both wars have played a role there, but probably the First World War was more influential than the Second.
We were just discussing when we were watching the logo, I know you didn't want to talk about it, but the one what happened, there was all spirit of progress.
Yep.
What happened?
All cut up. They it's a good story. Well, sorry, it's a tragic story, but they were converting them to they were converting the actual trains to diesel, and the guys in the Newport yards were told you have to cut up those spirits. And these guys, these were tough railway guys, but they'd been maintaining them since 1937.
So there were lots and lots of tears. But what they did was they hid one of them. It's pretty hard to hide a spirit of progress. But they did. And eventually the guys in head office said, we know what you're doing, we know it's out there somewhere, so you go away and find it and cut it up, or you're out of a job. Great try, I thought. Yeah.
I was coming back from Abraham's show.
Oh, great.
In many of the scenes there are quite remarkably good architecture doing. I was wondering if, in terms of Melbourne, was there a started sort of thing that we could say is our architecture? Is there
No, I don't think there is, because you look at the vocabulary of buildings from this era, there are some that have got local motifs, for instance, in Napier there's some with some Maori motifs on them. There's probably nothing that would cause you to look at a building and say instantly, that's from Melbourne. You look at some of those buildings, it could be anywhere in the world, and I don't know if Peter has a contrary view on that. The only one I can think of is a factory in South Melbourne that's got Melbourne butterflies on it.
Rob, this might be off the subject slightly. Have you ever seen something in Metropolis building in the city?
Metropolis? Ah, oh, that's Curtin House. Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, Harry Norris building. Yeah, yeah. You mean Metropolis Bookshop? Is that the one you mean?
The top of the building. It was Metropolis, wasn't it?
No, I don't think it was.
The apartment
was
up there.
Oh, not Manchester Unity. Yeah.
What did you think of that, Rob?
They've redone the apartment.
Yeah.
They remodeled it and took all the good features out. The boardroom's spectacular, if you can get in to see that. Uh-huh. Yeah. It's just a great building that's been well maintained. But it was a really good example of using all these high quality materials and putting in high speed lifts and the first escalator in Melbourne, all to attract tenants, because Manchester Unity only had a certain number of floors. So remember, everything comes back to money. You did all of these things to get the tenants in and to get the shoppers in. The escalator only went one floor and didn't come down again, but that didn't matter. It went up to a big cafe.
Probably just a couple of stuff like a mad scissor man up there.
Yeah, it's a bit off of me, isn't it? Yeah. One more, please.
It's just going to be German politicians around you asked about buildings. It was rather hard to come up with a phrase other than between the walls architecture.
Yeah.
But I've noticed, particularly in New Zealand, when they do they restore the geometric patterns, they use gold colours like ochre,
cut-edge,
blue, gold, red. Do you favour that? I think it looks sensational.
I must admit I do. Not so much the garish colours. But look, these things go in waves. In Miami, they do a lot of that these days, but there was a period where they were all just painted white, decoration and all. I prefer to see things kicked out, I must admit. Narrow taste, I guess. Yeah. Okay, look, I'm sorry, but
I'd like to, on behalf of the society and our group here, thank you very much for a highly entertaining and